the world of birds, rehabilitation specialists are like emergency workers. If there's a disease outbreak or environmental threat, they're the ones who see it first. Our guest has devoted much of her life to raptors and other bird species. She founded the Raptor Education Group in Antigo, and we will talk with her about her work and the world of raptors this hour. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network, and we will welcome your questions, your observations about eagles and hawks and other raptors, other birds. What are you seeing many out and about right now? Have you ever encountered a raptor that needed help or rehabilitation? We'll talk about some of the challenges that face these birds of prey in Wisconsin, and also we'll talk some about what state and federal policy changes are hurting or helping those who are trying to help raptors and other birds. And we will welcome your questions and observations at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Our guest is Marge Gibson, Executive Director and Founder of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated, or REGGIE, in Antigo. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being with us. I want to lift the veil a little bit here, and I'm not even sure you knew this, Marge, but I went to Wausau yesterday for a listener event, and it was a very nice listener event. But I wanted to use that trip to also finally visit you in Antigo to see your center. Then we were going to have you come on as a guest, hopefully in the Wausau studios. And we thought maybe there would be an owl or something you could bring with you. But it turns out that, life gets in the way sometimes of the best laid plans. And I did come home last night, and I wasn't able to have time earlier in the day to meet with you. But you've been on the show before, and I really wanted to see your center. I'll have to do it after I retire. So can I come and see you in Antigo?
You are most welcome anytime, Joy.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Do members of the public come to your center?
We do. They do, and we do have tours. Actually, our Wildlife Rehabilitation Center is so busy that we have a very small staff, so we do ask people to call ahead if it's general public and arrange to be on one of our tours so they can be sure to see the birds and to get the time that they need if they're just showing up at the door. We're often so busy with incoming patients and patient care that we just don't have enough time to devote to giving them a good experience and to even having them see some of the birds in our care.
I talk about how busy you are these days. Are there a lot of patients there right now?
Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. It's a little less than at the end of August, but we've had an incredibly busy summer with just so many things, from West Nile virus through birds that are, injured, hit by cars, cat caught. A lot of babies came in this year, I think maybe because of the temperature change, that their nesting schedule was a little off-kilter. So it's been a kind of a complicated summer, but we're through that. Now we're hoping for a calm fall.
I hope for your sake and for the birds' sake. Are you rehabilitate birds exclusively?
Yes, we do all birds. We not only birds of prey, but everything down to hummingbirds and trumpeter swans, sandhill cranes. I mean, kind of, if it's a bird, we can take care of it.
Yeah. Are you still seeing, the last time we spoke, it was a while back, there was some lead poisoning going on of eagles and some other birds. Is that still happening?
That does continue to happen, and it will happen until people use copper bullets for ammunition for harvesting wildlife. And it's a huge problem, but it's a difficult change to make. And I think that hunters are coming to it because it's safer for their families as well. Lead poisoning causes brain damage and lower IQs in children, human children, as well. So it's a common sense change, but the change is hard. And I think that there's a lot of misinformation out there that hunters are are sort of struggling with.
Yeah. I think I saw a picture of one of my favorite birds, the loon, on your Facebook page or your website. A loon can just get hurt in many, many different ways. Did you have one in there recently?
We do, mm-hmm. And loons can be injured in other ways, but often because of lead sinkers, and they swallow fish whole. They can swallow quite a large fish, actually. And if that fish has, swallowed a hook and then swallowed the lead sinker, even if it's a tiny one, the loon swallowing that, the whole unit of the fish with everything that's in it, will become lead poisoned. And people are always amazed at how small of a piece of lead causes lead poisoning, but the CDC says that a piece of lead the size of a grain of sand can poison a human child. So you can see that a sinker or even fragmented lead pieces from lead ammunition in a harvested animal would cause a huge problem in an eagle, for instance, or a vulture, or any of the birds that happen to scavenge on it.
Get a little bit more into the lead issue as we go along, but you mentioned that West Nile virus was a problem this summer. They're just what? They're getting bit by mosquitoes, or what's going on?
It is mosquito transferred, and this summer, every year is different. The virus, because viruses mutate, that's kind of the way that they are. It changes a little bit. It's sort of like our flu virus. You have a different strain, and I think we're seeing that change as well. So this year happened to be a really bad year, and I think because we had a very wet early spring, and there were more mosquitoes, and it also hit earlier. It hit earlier in the year. Usually we don't see it. We're used to seeing it at the end of July or early August, West Nile virus, but this year it started the second week of June. So it was earlier and a more more difficult strain this year. The symptoms were more difficult to manage, and we did have more fatalities this year.
Yeah. Well, as I mentioned in the lead-in, I've heard that rehabilitation specialists are considered sort of the first responders for the bird world. If there's a disease or an environmental threat that's emerging, you're the first to see it. What questions do you ask when a sick or injured bird comes into your care?
Well, we have a whole list of things that we try to get a good history from the person who's found the bird, and realistically, that's the only way that we can. We can't ask the bird. We can go by their symptoms and diagnose in that way. But the person can give us a lot of information if they've been seeing the bird, on the ground. If it's an eagle, for instance, for a couple of days or a week, and they're able to approach it. If it's convulsing, or if they know that there was a toxin on a carcass, for instance, that someone unknowingly or put out for hoping to, to kill a different animal, and an eagle comes along and scavenges, and it's not their target animal, but of course they're just as poisoned. So that information is really important to us. Where the bird is from, that can also give us a lot of information, and we get birds from all over the state, and actually other states as well. So that's interesting bits of information, and can lead us to, draw conclusions and to know how to treat the bird if we think it's been exposed to a certain toxin or something like that.
And then your goal is to treat the bird and get it healthy and then release it back into the wild?
Get it back out, absolutely. It's always interesting to me how people, when we have releases, and we do a lot of eagle releases in the Sauk City area during eagle days especially, or during the winter time, which is one of the best times to release them, they always think that we're feeling sad when they're released. And I always say, I wish they'd send a postcard now and again, but, the release is actually our success as well as theirs, and it's certainly why we do our work.
Yeah, why is winter the best time to release them?
Well, our eagle population has grown, and the territorial aspect of eagles, they're territorial, and they do fight over territories. So along with prey availability, if they have a really good prey base, in other words, they're living right on a very abundant river or something like that, they have a lot of food. They're not going to worry so much about someone else coming in unless it's breeding season, which is a whole different scenario. But it's safer now to release them in the winter when their hormones aren't flowing and they're, you know, they're in natural wintering areas and they congregate in the winter, so there's none of that territorial aggression going on. Which you know, we're releasing them, they're coming from a captive situation, they are recovered, they've been exercised, they've been in our large flight, they're well conditioned, but still it's a change. You know, they're going back out into the wild and they have to you know, start socializing again and fitting into to the wild population. So it's important to make sure that they're comfortable and that they're safe at that time.
Yeah, and the release during Eagle Days in Prairie du Sac or the Sauk area is that's a great area for eagles in the winter because the Wisconsin River is open and flowing and that's what they like?
Well, it is. Mm-hmm. And also the dam is there, which actually, for better or for worse, chops up a lot of fish, so they have kind of sushi if they're not fishing well.
I have no idea.
And they also have adults there. I mean, in speaking of youngsters that have been raised here, raised by other adults, so they're raised by foster parents, so they're never raised by us. They're not imprinted to humans, but they do have to learn, you know, certain skills once they get out there, and you know, they have all these chopped up pieces of fish, so they have really adequate diet, and you know, can get by, you know, scavenging until they can hone their talents.
Yeah, well, I know the eagles stay with us in the winter. With migration going on right now, are raptors on the move?
Well, some of them are, certainly. We have the broadwing hawk that's moving now and should be, in fact, should be done by the end of September. And they go all the way down to South America. So they have quite a long migration. Now, most of our raptors don't go that far. Eagles usually go to a congregating area, what we call a wintering area. So our eagles from here, maybe the Upper Michigan and some Canadians, go down along the Mississippi and Wisconsin River into Iowa, that sort of thing. But they don't go too much further. Red tails, you know, go into our southern states, but most of them, you know, go just as far as they can to make a living, and then they come home when spring hits.
We are talking about raptors and other birds. Our guest is Marge Gibson, Executive Director and Founder of the Raptor Education Group, Incorporated in Antigo. We're talking about the birds and the raptors and migration. Are you seeing any? We're talking about rehabbing these birds and what birds Marge has been seeing over the summer and these days. Have you ever encountered a hurt bird? Do you have any questions about raptors or other birds? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. We are getting some education about raptors with Marge Gibson, who is the executive director and founder of REGGIE, the Raptor Education Group Incorporated in Antigo. She's telling us what she's seeing these days at her wildlife rehabilitation center and educating us about raptors of all kinds, and other birds, too. If you think raptors are awesome, we'd like to hear from you. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We also welcome any questions you might have about policy issues facing wildlife rehabilitators or the wildlife that they are rehabilitating. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I want to take a step backwards, Marge, before we get into some more issues. You and your husband, Don, founded the Raptor Education Group in 1990. What led you to do that? Tell us the story.
Well, I was a field researcher on raptors in Southern California, which is where my husband is from. I'm a native of Antigo, actually. And I realized that the ones that were injured, that we found injured in our field work, really didn't have a place to go, you know, to recover adequately. So we founded a center, Orange County Bird of Prey Center, in Southern California in the late 70s. So I had that center for a number of years, and then we made the move back to Antigo. My parents were getting older, and it just made sense for us to come back to our area. So we developed a center here. Mostly I wanted to do education and to write children's books and to do some writing, which I've done some, but not nearly what I wanted to do. But we developed the center hoping that it was going to be, you know, a small center, and I was going to do mostly education. But it grew, and as they say, if you build it, they will come, and they certainly have.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously it's a labor of love for you all these years. Why do you love caring for raptors? What is it about raptors and birds in particular?
Well, first of all, it's an incredible honor to work with them. They're very intelligent, they're magnificent, they're powerful, but they use their power in a judicious manner, not like we do sometimes. So they really garner a lot of respect. And having worked with them in field work and, you know, seeing them in their natural environment and their families and, you know, banding in the wild, you develop, you know, a great deal of respect for them. Having said that, I was kind of born to work with birds. My first word was birdie, according to my parents. And, you know, I've always been very close to birds for one reason or another. So it's very natural for me, and it's just how it worked out.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I appreciate all birds as well, but there is something about the raptor or the, they're usually larger for one thing, and they're just so magnificent. We should probably define a raptor. What is a raptor?
A raptor, the word raptor means to seize in Latin, and so basically it's a bird that has the talons and it has the ability to hunt, to use their feet to seize their prey. And so that's what a raptor is. It's a hunting bird that, and they have a wide prey base. I mean, osprey hunt fish, eagles hunt fish as well, but they have a wider prey base than that. They can also hunt snakes and a variety of things.
Interesting. So, in fact, when you mentioned osprey, we did get a call from John, who is on the road and couldn't stay with us. He was asking about the ospreys and their fall migration. When will they leave and where do they go?
Well, they're starting to go now, and ospreys usually go down to the anywhere from the southern U.S. into Mexico and Central America. The Caribbean, they're going to be surprised this year when they get there.
Yeah, that's right.
So we don't have a lot of studies on ospreys, but some that, you know, are allowing us to find their wintering areas that you know, was once a total mystery.
So will they just will they be okay hanging out on a destroyed island?
You know, this is something that, you know, we learn every year, but it is a natural phenomenon. So they adapt, and what wildlife does is adapt as well as they can. So I think if they find one place inhospitable, they will probably move, you know, to another place that where they can hunt and they can survive. Wildlife, as I say, adapts, and that's a wonderful thing. And so we have to trust in their ability to do that.
How many different types or species of raptors are there that we would see in Wisconsin?
Oh, my gosh. Quite a few. We have several buteos, which are red tail, red shoulders, broad-winged hawks, excipiters. We have goshawks, Cooper's hawks, sharp-shinned hawks, the falcons. We have peregrine falcons, merlins now, which have started to develop larger population areas in our state, and American kestrels. Vultures, not always considered a raptor, but have been put in that category before, and our raptor our vulture population is growing as well. And of course, bald eagles, owls, great horned owls, barred owls, screech owls, saw-whit owls. So we have quite a few, and some of them only live in the in more remote areas, so you don't see them in cities. But that's one reason that our area is pretty special, because we have a lot of birds that aren't urban dwellers.
Yeah, are there any of those raptors that are in any sort of danger or being threatened more than others?
Well, I think that bald eagles were put, of course, on the endangered list for a long time. And that designation has been removed in most areas. But with the removing of that kind of protection, and first of all, they're all protected, but sometimes people get careless, and, we find them sort of targeted, which is unfortunate, but it's all a matter of education.
How so targeted?
Shootings.
Oh, no.
Poisonings. Things like that, and people are always surprised when even on our Facebook we have an eagle shooting, which is highly illegal, but it happens, and it's something that
I can't fathom.
I can't define, but it happens, and it happens, unfortunately, with some regularity.
Wow. Are there any, it seems to me that I was hearing that kestrels were not as abundant as they used to be.
Right. And I was talking to the folks at the Central Wisconsin Kestrel Research Group, and they have not had a lot of reproduction this year. But weather causes a lot of different problems. And this year, our weather has been so strange. We had that very warm period in February, and then we had a lot of cold. And then, and kestrels, along with a lot of other species, rely on large insects. And they rely on, for instance, now the grasshoppers, the large grasshoppers should be out. And in our area, they're not. Young kestrels rely on that to eat and to grow. That's their first prey, is something small like that. It's really not available now. And we're not sure what caused less reproduction. It could have been just the cold, and maybe the babies were not able to survive, or the eggs weren't able to hatch. But actually, that happened in a lot of species this year, and a lot of different avian species kind of across the board.
Well, Clarence from Watertown is a good guy. He says that he's a farmer, and he would like to create a better food and habitat environment for owls. Is there anything you might suggest to Clarence as a farmer, what he could do?
First of all, bless him.
Yeah.
Farmers are some of the first conservationists, and my family grew up on farms here in northern Wisconsin. The one thing that farmers can do is not use pesticides. Pesticides are difficult because they're in the food chain. And if you're going to have owls, you have to have mice and rats that the owls can predate on, and they have to be safe for them to eat. In other words, no organophosphates in their fur or any of those things, and rat poison stays in an animal, even though it's alive and running. It takes a couple of weeks for it to kill them, and as they're getting slower, they become better prey items for young birds especially, and we see an awful lot of rat poisoned young birds. Oh. And as the label says, one bite kills, and that's true. There's no antidote that we can use to bring them back. They one bite and their liver is pretty much gone, and they bleed to death.
Yeah, that just reminded me that coming up this afternoon on Central Time, they will be talking about a surge in rat populations because of the warmer weather. I suppose that might the people trying to poison them would hurt the birds. Does that affect
Correct.
The birds in other ways?
It really does, mm-hmm. And I think that whenever you see a resurgence as was described there, then people are very anxious to get rid of them, and of course they do use poisons. But I would encourage people to at least use professionals that are aware of wildlife as well, and maybe it can be placed in a way that it's not as accessible if you need to. However, the best thing, of course, is to use snap traps, hidden snap traps, so you're not going to catch blue jays and other things responding to them. But but get your target animal. But that's what we're seeing. With weather has changed so many things. The warm spring this year has just really sent the Northwoods into shock, sort of. Crab apples, for instance, aren't that the birds kind of rely on coming through, didn't fruit this year.
Oh, because it was so cold.
So we're seeing a lot of changes, and how the migration's going to go is still kind of a wild card. We're not sure. A lot of the birds that come through, even from Canada, kind of rely on us to have these, little flowering crab apple trees and the fruits that keep them going, and in the winter time and in early spring as well, as they come back through, and they're not here this year. So a lot of changes, and of course those things are something that we're going to document and know more about as time goes on.
Yeah. I know that, and some listeners might remember that I was on a quest to see snowy owls when we had a few winters a few years back now, where there was an eruption. Is that what it's called?
Eruption.
When you get many snowy owls migrating as far south as Madison, Wisconsin, which apparently is not usually what they do?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, do we know if, is that continuing? Do we know we're seeing more snowy owls on a regular basis now?
Well, eruptions do occur and have occurred periodically through time. So it's usually based on the prey availability up in the Arctic where the snowies live, and some of the smaller species like pine siskins that are in the boreal forest in Canada. They come down. This is their Florida in the wintertime. So, they come down to us. Depending on if they don't have enough food there, then they follow the food down, which, they can come down as far as here, or even we've heard of them as far down as Kentucky. So that is a natural thing. But to see it happening more regularly is unusual. And again, it's kind of a wild card now. I think people are, can speculate, but we don't have any firm facts as to how it's coming. But we do see a few. We didn't have as many last year. We do get them in as patients often if they get in trouble. But they're really spectacular. They're so beautiful and so very different from the owls that we have here.
Yeah, and I was successful, and I did see two that were that were feeding in a farm field in a rural area near Madison. So that was very exciting.
Very nice.
And I did. I went on a field trip with the Natural Resources Foundation, and it was last fall, and we went to the Linwood Station in the Stevens Point area, and we participated in and learned about the banding of saw-whet owls.
They're amazing.
They're little tiny babies. They
yeah.
are so cute. And I adopted one, and his name is Bouncing, so just...
Of course, that's a perfect name for a solid owl.
But
perfect.
So maybe I mean, I know you're not the Linwood station, but the purpose of this is to kind of see where they're migrating to if they, you know, if they, I don't know, get discovered again or something.
You know, it is, mm-hmm. And I think that one of the things that we struggle with is that there's been a lot of cutbacks in the federal programs, including bird banding and research, which is unfortunate because what they do at Linwood Springs is really important. We band all our birds as well, so we can follow them. But unfortunately, without telemetry or without more scientific methods, you can't find out until they're gone, until someone reports them as dead, and then you only know their movements. You only know that mm-hmm. where they went for the winter time or where they are breeding, you know, in the spring or whatever. But you don't know and how old they are. We know when they were banded and, you know, when they pass, unfortunately, and how that happens. So we do get data, but it would be nice to see their, you know, their direct movements as well. And we have had birds that we've done telemetry on and released in Sauk City, but it's been, you know, a number of years, and it really is fascinating to be able to follow them and learn a lot about them, their movements, and you're better able to understand habitat as well as the dangers that they encounter and why.
Well, since you talked a little bit about cutbacks, budget cutbacks, in an era of state and federal budget cutbacks, you say that volunteers are more important than ever?
Absolutely. I think that people often misunderstand. They think that wildlife rehabilitators are funded by state and federal government, or at least supported in some way, and that's not true, not true at all. In fact, we have to pay for our permits. We're still considered wildlife users, if you can imagine that. I hope that changes at some point. But most of us are nonprofits. Very few people have funding from the city that they're in. But we do count on volunteers to help us, whether it's transporting, sometimes in capture, often in capture in the Northwoods, for instance, because we cover such a large area. Volunteers are so important. We have very few staff, and having the money to pay staff is almost non-existent. It all comes from donations, and any funding that we could get as far as grants, which is important as well. But I'm not paid, for instance. I've been a volunteer for a long, long time, as has my husband. I do have some paid staff because we have to. We do so many patients. But it is important, and volunteering, we don't have many volunteers here in Antigo. We live in a remote area, but it would be so helpful to do things such as construction or repair or, you know, things like that, whereas our biologists, our rehabilitators, are, you know, should be working with patients, not, digging holes for, you know, things.
We are talking with Marge Gibson. She is executive director and founder of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated in Antigo. And we are talking about all things raptor related and other birds too. Are you a big fan of raptors, hawks, eagles, owls? Are you seeing many out and about these days? Have you ever encountered a bird that needed help or rehabilitation? We are talking about the work of the Raptor Education Group. We welcome your questions and your sightings, your observations, your experiences at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Time to take some calls from you on your questions, your observations regarding raptors in particular, but other birds as well. We are talking with the founder of REGI, the Raptor Education Group Incorporated in Antigo, where they educate a lot of us about raptors, and they also are a wildlife rehabilitation center, and they take care of a lot of injured birds. So far, she said a lot this summer, some with West Nile, some with lead poisoning, some maybe disrupted because of weather patterns and the like. And before we do take those calls, Marge, I wanted to ask you, when I said that you see it first if there's a disease outbreak or an environmental threat or something else, is there an emerging trend or threat or concern that you have that that may not be in the headlines yet?
Well, the one this spring and this summer was West Nile, and we're very fortunate to have our state lab was able to do a lot of necropsies for us and to find out some other causes of death, which are still under investigation. But when an animal is injured or there's a trend, whether it's on a certain highway. Car hits or something, we wildlife rehabilitators are the ones that see them first. And we are the ones who, sort of report to the state that these things are happening. Very different than in past years when we had to kind of wait till, there was a huge outbreak or something like that. We can catch it earlier. We can at least alert people that this is going on. And this is true even with the lead poisoning issue. Years ago we didn't know, for instance, why they're all dying. Now we test them all as they come in, and we have a better idea of when and how. And, if, for instance, we're coming up on lead poisoning season, which is hunting season, it's such a dramatic change that, we know to expect it, and, we're prepared with the additional chelating agents and things like that to treat it when they come in.
Earlier this year, Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke lifted a ban on lead ammunition and fishing tackle on federal lands, a measure that was put into place at the end of the Obama administration. How significant a rollback is that?
I think it's significant. I think in a couple of different ways. First, the actual use of lead on federal lands. The lands belong to the people, and I think that... we should have a say as to, how they're utilized and the animals that are harvested there, if they're going to, their bodies are going to affect other wildlife in a negative way. The other thing, though, is that I think the take-home message in an action like that is to remove the respect for the fact that lead is a toxin or that it does affect wildlife, and we should be aware of that and consider it to the wildlife that we share the world with. So that, even that idea that we are not really responsible, that whatever happens, is kind of the take-home message that gave, and that was incredibly disappointing.
All right, now we will go to calls. Katie in Janesville is with us. Hi, Katie.
Hi, good morning. I actually have two questions. One, and they both involve my 16-year-old son. For years, he has wanted to become a wildlife rehabilitator. He is a junior in high school. What kind of classes do I direct him to? What kind of schools? What kind of experiences? And along the same note, he's an avid hunter and fisherman, and on the way to work the other day, he happened to hit and kill a kestrel. We have it in our freezer, but can we? Is it legal to actually get that and mount it?
First of all, no, it's not legal for you to have it in your freezer. They're protected under the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. All migratory birds are, which in Wisconsin includes every bird except the English sparrow, which is a introduced species, and the European starling, which is also an introduced species, or pet birds that are released and here accidentally. So do take it to your local DNR station, and they can utilize it, or a university often has permits to be able to keep them and keep them in their own studies. So that can happen, but do get it out of your freezer because it is illegal for you to have it there. At 16, it used to be, and I think that some things have gone backwards. Children have a lot of passion when they're young, and teenagers especially, and I firmly feel like we need to utilize those passions so they don't go dormant or maybe die, you know, as they get older and get on to other things. But his interest in wildlife and in, you know, the outdoors and even hunting, I mean, that's a conservation issue as well, and something that, you know, he enjoys being outside, and wildlife is part of that. I used to be that people would be able to take them in, and now it's illegal without permits. You can't get a permit till you're 18, however, and you can't really volunteer working directly with our patients till you're 18 as well. So I would say maybe he can volunteer at a center, not working directly with patients, but, you know, being around them earlier. We do have a website. The state DNR under Wildlife Rehabilitation has a website. You can Google that, State of Wisconsin DNR Wildlife Rehabilitation, and a page will pop up that on the far right side has ideas about captive wildlife and things that he can do, and the way that the permits are handled in our state. And if he's dealing with birds, he would also have to have a federal permit as well. But I think his interest, I would just, you know, try to encourage him in his interest. Don't use lead in his shooting, his ammunition, because that way he can start conserving already, even on an individual basis. And, you know, studies as far as going to school, biology, all of our staff are either biologists, zoologists, or have studied captive wildlife. There are a lot of schools that offer some good training for that. UWSP, we work with quite a lot. Of course, we're up here in the north, but they have a wonderful program in wildlife. So I think for him to start searching those things out as he reaches the age of going away to college, and start to inquire at your local wildlife center or, you know, even others that you're more interested in. And he can, but don't let that passion go away.
Thank you very much, Katie, for the call. We have a email from Joan who says, I believe I'm getting quite a few migratory birds, different songs that I'm hearing lately. She says, I feel like I should put out a bird bath as they may be attracted to our chlorinated pool. Maybe we can just talk, would chlorine hurt birds, and or what should you do if you want to help the migrating birds, whether they're raptors or not?
A lot of our birds migrating right now are actually warblers and the what we call neotropicals. These are the small birds, brightly colored, usually eat insects, actually. You can put out mealworms. They're going to be gone in a very quick time, though. And having a bird bath is an important aspect. Make sure to keep it clean. And, you know, not use a lot of bleach because that, of course, will affect their digestive system. But just keep it clean and regular water would be good. Very soon, other birds are going to start migrating. Keep your feeders full of a variety of seeds because you never know what species coming through.
Yeah. Joan also wished me well in my retirement and says, I know this will be a great new chapter in your life, and I wanted to thank Joan for that and say, yes, I do plan on doing some volunteering at a local humane society. Maybe I'll volunteer for a wildlife rehab center, too.
We can use you. We can use you.
Ann in Monona is with us. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I wanted to know whether the birds of the Everglades were, I'm sure they were affected. In fact, I think I've heard they were, especially there are wading birds and raptors, mostly wading birds. Whether you ever rehabilitated any of the birds that far south. You know, I've seen an eagle at the southernmost, I think on the Bay of Biscayne, entrance to the Everglades, that had its nest right near the administration building there. So, you know, I don't know what hurricane conditions will do to to these birds, but I would assume some of them are affected.
I would assume a lot of them are. Marge?
You know, I think it's still, we are not sure. This hurricane was, you know, a very difficult one for humans and for, you know, for all animals. So I think we're still kind of, you know, figuring that out. But at least birds that can fly, if they're not injured, their wings aren't injured, they can go inland, or they can, you know, get away with it, get away from it in some way like that. So as long as they have flight, you know, they're going to be okay. It's the little ones that, you know, that you worry about hitting a hurricane as they're, you know, migrating down. And we did have a lot of migrants that are going down Chimney Swifts, for instance, swallows, that, you know, we don't know what happened to. And we won't know until we start doing monitoring for their numbers and their population to see if it's been affected. There are wildlife centers in Florida, and some very fine centers that do take care of the birds in that area. And I know they're having a lot of trouble right now. A lot of them are without power and, you know, getting food or even gas to go pick up injured wildlife is a problem. So, you know, it's a complicated situation, and, you know, we wish them our best, and I certainly hope that that a lot of them, you know, made it out.
Thank you, Anne. Diane in Spring Green is with us. Hi, Diane.
Hello. Hi, good morning. At 8:20, I was listening to your show, and here come my husband with a box with a bird that hurt its wing.
Aw. What happened?
And he was in the garden, and he thinks it hit the garden fence last night.
Do you know what kind of bird it is?
Well, the closest I can get to it is a northern water thrush.
Oh.
It has a yellow, real soft yellow eye ring, and then it's got blotches or big streaks. It's real soft yellow on it from the beak down, and then it's got just from the beak to the beginning of the eye or just past is a little, like, yellowish streak.
So you want to know what to do with this injured bird, Diane?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so it's recent. You do have some wildlife centers in your area. Again, I'm not exactly sure who you're closest to, so you can go to the DNR, with State of Wisconsin DNR Wildlife Rehabilitation page, and it will give you a list of wildlife rehabilitators in our state by county, and then tell you what species they rehabilitate, whether they do birds or whether they just do mammals or, you know, what kind of birds. So I think a water thrush is a warbler, and we are seeing a lot of warblers coming through right now. They do eat insects. Is he stunned or is he injured?
He's just sitting there. He hasn't made any noises, and his left wing looks a little injured. My husband thought
Okay. Sometimes, you know, if they hit your window or they're just stunned or they hit, you know, something, and as you say, in the garden, we always tell people to put them in a little cardboard box with a towel on the bottom, keep them for a half hour or so. Sometimes they just need that to kind of reorient themselves, and then if they can fly, you know, you can feel comfortable releasing them. And he is with a flock, so that would be the best case scenario. However, if he does have a wing injury, he will have to go into rehabilitation, and I would urge you to, you know, to search out someone in your area that you know, that can care for warblers or songbirds. And, you know, good luck with him. I appreciate your husband picking him up.
Yeah. Diane, thanks for the call. And Marge, thank you so much for your time this morning. We are out of it, and I hope to see you sometime on the road soon.
Wonderful. You're always welcome, Joy. Thank you so much.
Marge Gibson, Executive Director and Founder of the Raptor Education Group Incorporated in Antigo. Thank you to Naija Ellison and Michelle Johnson for producing this program. Thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.